This is Audible.
Wolf Song, written by T.J. Klune, narrated by Kurt Graves. For Ellie, because of all those Tumblr links, you know the ones, the thirst is real. Oh, please don't go. We'll eat you up, we love you so. Maurice Sendak, Where the Wild Things Are. Chapter 1. Motes of Dust, Cold, and Metal. I was 12 when my daddy put a suitcase by the door. What's that for? I asked from the kitchen. He sighed, low and rough. Took him a moment to turn around. When did you get home? A while ago. My skin itched. Didn't feel right. He glanced at an old clock on the wall. The plastic covering its face was cracked. Later than I thought. Look, Ox. He shook his head. He seemed flustered, confused. My dad was many things. A drunk, quick to anger with words and fists. A sweet devil with a laugh that rumbled like that old Harley Davidson WLA we'd rebuilt the summer before. But he was never flustered. He was never confused. Not like he was now. I itched something awful. I know you're not the smartest boy, he said. He glanced back at his suitcase. And it was true. I was not cursed with an overabundance of brains. My mom said I was just fine. My daddy thought I was slow. My mom said it wasn't a race. He was deep in his whiskey at that point and started yelling and breaking things. He didn't hit her. Not that night, anyway. Mom cried a lot, but he didn't hit her. I made sure of it. When he finally started snoring in his old chair, I snuck back to my room and hid under my covers. Yes, sir, I said to him. He looked back at me, and I'll swear until the day I die that I saw some kind of love in his eyes. Dumb as an ox, he said. It didn't sound mean coming from him. It just was. I shrugged. Wasn't the first time he'd said that to me, even though Mom asked him to stop. It was okay. He was my dad. He knew better than anyone. You're gonna get shit, he said, for most of your life. I'm bigger than most, I said, like it meant something. And I was. People were scared of me, though I didn't want them to be. I was big, like my daddy. He was a big man with a sloping gut thanks to the booze. People won't understand you, he said.
Oh.
They won't get you.
I don't need them to.
I wanted them to very much, but I could see why they wouldn't. I have to go.
Where?
Away. Look.
Does Mom know?
He laughed, but it didn't sound like he found anything funny. Sure, maybe. She knew what was going to happen. Probably has for a while. I stepped toward him.
When are you coming back?
Ox, people are going to be mean. You just ignore them. Keep your head down.
People aren't mean. Not always.
I didn't know that many people. Didn't really have any friends. But the people I did know weren't mean. Not always. They just didn't know what to do with me, most of them. But that was okay. I didn't know what to do with me either. And then he said, You're not going to see me for a while. Maybe a long while.
What about the shop? I asked him.
He worked down at Gordo's. He smelled like grease and oil and metal when he came home, fingers blackened. He had shirts with his name embroidered on them. Curtis, stitched in reds and whites and blues. I always thought that was the most amazing thing, a mark of a great man, to have your name etched onto your shirt. He let me go with him sometimes. He showed me how to change the oil when I was 3, how to change a tire when I was 4, how to rebuild an engine for a 1957 Chevy Bel Air Coupe when I was 9. Those days, I would come home smelling of grease and oil and metal, and I would dream late at night of having a shirt with my name embroidered on it. Oxnard, it would say. Or maybe just Ox. Gordo doesn't care, is what my dad said. which felt like a lie. Gordo cared a lot. He was gruff, but he told me once that when I was old enough, I could come talk to him about a job. "Guys like us have to stick together," he said. I didn't know what he meant by that, but the fact that he thought of me as anything was good enough for me. "Oh," is all I could say to my dad. "I don't regret you," he said. "But I regret everything else."
I didn't understand. "Is this about..."
I didn't know what this was about. "I regret being here," he said. "I can't take it."
"Well, that's okay," I said. "We can fix that."
"We could just go somewhere else." "There's no fixing, Ox."
"Did you charge your phone?"
I asked him because he never remembered.
"Don't forget to charge your phone so I can call you. I got new math that I don't understand. Mr. House said I could ask you for help."
Even though I knew my dad wouldn't get the math problems any more than I would. Pre-algebra, it was called. That scared me, because it was already hard when it was a pre. What would happen when it was just algebra without the pre involved? I knew that face he made then. It was his angry face. He was pissed off. "Don't you fucking get it?" he snapped. I tried not to flinch.
"No,"
I said, because I didn't. "Ox," my daddy said, "there's going to be no math, no phone calls. Don't make me regret you too."
"Oh,"
I said. "You have to be a man now. That's why I'm trying to teach you this stuff. Shit's gonna get slung on you. You brush it off and keep going." His fists were clenched at his sides. I didn't know why.
"I can be a man,"
I assured him, because maybe that would make him feel better. "I know," he said.
I smiled at him, but he looked away.
"I have to go," he eventually said.
"When are you coming back?"
I asked him. He staggered a step toward the door, took a breath that rattled around his chest, picked up his suitcase, walked out. I heard his old truck start up outside. It stuttered a bit when it picked up. Sounded like he needed a new timing belt. I'd have to remind him later. Mom got home late that night, after working a double in the diner. She found me in the kitchen, standing in the same spot I'd been in when my daddy had walked out the door. Things were different now.
"Ox," she asked, "what's going on?"
She looked very tired.
"Hey, Mom,"
I said.
"Why are you crying?" "I'm not."
And I wasn't, because I was a man now. She touched my face. Her hands smelled like salt and French fries and coffee. Her thumbs brushed against my wet cheeks.
"What happened?"
I looked down at her, because she'd always been small, and at some point in the last year or so, I'd grown right past her. I wished I could remember the day it happened. It seemed monumental.
"I'll take care of you,"
I promised her.
"You don't ever need to worry."
Her eyes softened. I could see the lines around her eyes, the tired set of her jaw.
"You always do, but that's..."
She stopped, took a breath.
"He left?"
she asked, and she sounded so small.
"I think so."
I twirled her hair against my finger, dark like my own, like my daddy's. We were all so dark.
"What did he say?"
she asked.
"I'm a man now,"
I told her. That's all she needed to hear. She laughed until she cracked right down the middle. He didn't take the money when he left. Not all of it. Not that there was much to begin with. He didn't take any pictures either. Just some clothes, his razor, his truck, some of his tools. If I hadn't known any better, I would have thought he never was, at all. I called his phone 4 days later. It was the middle of the night. It rang a couple of times before a message picked up saying the phone was no longer in service. I had to apologize to Mom the next morning. I'd held the handset so hard that it had cracked. She said it was okay, and we didn't talk about it ever again. I was six when my daddy bought me my own set of tools. Not kid stuff. No bright colors and plastic. All cold and metal and real. He said, "Keep them clean, and God help you if I find them laying outside. They'll rust and I'll tan your hide. That ain't what this shit is for, you got that?" I touched them reverently because they were a gift.
"Okay," I said, unable to find the words to say just how full my heart felt.
I stood in their, her, room one morning a couple of weeks after he left. Mom was at the diner again, picking up another shift. Her ankles would be hurting by the time she got home. Sunlight fell through a window on the far wall. Little bits of dust caught the light. It smelled like him in the room. Like her. Like both of them. A thing together. It would be a long time before it stopped. But it would. Eventually. I slid open the closet door. One side was mostly empty. Things were left, though. Little pieces of life no longer lived. Like his work shirt. Four of them, hanging in the back. Gordo's in cursive. "Curtis," they all said. "Curtis. Curtis. Curtis." I touched each one of them with the tips of my fingers. I took the last one down from the hanger, slid it over my shoulders. It was heavy and smelled like man and sweat and work. I said, "Okay, Ox, you can do this." So I started to button up the work shirt. My fingers stumbled over them. Too big and blunt, clumsy and foolish I was. All hands and arms and legs, graceless and dull. I was too big for myself. The last button finally went through, and I closed my eyes. I took a breath. I remembered how Mom had looked this morning, the purple lines under her eyes, the slump of her shoulders. She'd said, "Be good today, Ox. Try to stay out of trouble." As if trouble was the only thing I knew, as if I was in it constantly. I opened my eyes, looked in the mirror that hung on the closet door. The shirt was too large, or I was too small, I don't know which. I looked like a kid playing dress-up, like I was pretending. I scowled at my reflection, lowered my voice, and said,
"I'm a man."
I didn't believe me.
"I'm a man."
I winced.
"I'm a man."
Eventually, I took off my father's work shirt and hung it back up in the closet. I shut the doors behind me, the dust motes still floating in the fading sun. Chapter 2. Catalytic Converter. Dreaming while awake. "Gordo's."
"Hey, Gordo."
A growl. "Yeah? Who's this?" Like he didn't know.
"Ox."
"Oxnard Matheson. I was just thinking about you."
"Really?"
"No. What the fuck do you want?" I grinned, because I knew. The smile felt strange on my face.
"It's good to hear you, too."
"Yeah, yeah. Haven't seen you, kiddo." He was pissed at my absence.
"I know. I had to."
I didn't know what I had to do. "How long has it been since the sperm donor fucked off?"
"A couple of months, I guess."
57 days, 10 hours, 42 minutes. "Fuck him. You know that, right?"
I did. But he was still my daddy, so maybe I didn't. "Sure," I said.
"Your ma doing okay?"
"Yeah."
No, I didn't think she was. "Ox."
"No, I don't know."
He inhaled deeply and sighed.
"Smoke break?"
I asked him, and it hurt because that was familiar. I could almost smell the smoke. It burned my lungs. I could see him if I thought about it enough, sitting out behind the shop, smoking and scowling, long legs stretched out, ankles crossed, oil under his fingernails, those bright and colorful tattoos covering his arms. Ravens and flowers, and shapes meant to have meaning that I could never figure out. "Yeah, death sticks, man."
"You could quit."
"I don't quit anything, Ox."
"Old dogs learn new tricks,"
he snorted. "I'm 24,
Old ox,
he knew. So I told him.
We're not doing okay.
Bank?
He asked. She doesn't think I see them. The letters.
How far behind?
I don't know.
I was embarrassed. I shouldn't have called.
I gotta go.
Ox, he snapped, crisp and clear. How far?
7 months.
That fucking bastard, he said. He was angry.
He didn't.
Don't. Ox, just don't.
I was thinking.
Oh boy.
Could I?
My tongue felt heavy.
Spit it out. Could I have a job?
I said in a rush.
It's just we need the money and I can't let her lose the house. It's all we have left. I'd do good, Gordo. I would do good work and I'd work for you forever. It was going to happen anyway and can we just do it now? Can we just do it now? I'm sorry, I just need to do it now because I have to be the man now.
My throat hurt. I wished I had something to drink, but I couldn't get my legs to move. Gordo didn't say anything at first. Then, I think that might be the most I've ever heard you talk at one time.
I don't say much.
Obviously. That right. He sounded amused. Here's what we're gonna do. He gave my mom the money to get the mortgage caught back up. Said it would come out of the pay he'd give me under the table until I could legally work for him. Mom cried. She said no, but then she realized she couldn't say no. So she cried and said yes, and Gordo made her promise to tell him if it got bad again. I think she thought he hung the moon and might have tried to smile a little wider at him, might have laughed lightly, might have cocked her hips a bit. She didn't know that I'd seen him once with another guy when I was 6 or so, holding his elbow lightly as they walked into the movies. Gordo had been laughing deeply and had stars in his eyes. I didn't think he'd be interested in my mom. I never saw the man with Gordo ever again, and I never saw Gordo with anyone else. I wanted to ask him, but there was a tightness around his eyes that didn't used to be there before, and so I never did. People don't like to be reminded of sad things. The threatening letters and phone calls stopped coming from the bank. It only took 6 months to pay back Gordo, or so he said. I didn't understand how money worked all that well, but it seemed like it should have taken longer than that. Gordo called us square, and that was that. I never really saw much of the money after that. Gordo told me he'd opened an account for me at the bank, where it would accrue interest. I didn't know what accrue interest meant, but I trusted Gordo. For a rainy day, he said. I didn't like it when it rained. I had a friend once. His name was Jeremy, and he wore glasses and smiled nervously at many things. We were 9 years old. He liked comic books and drawing. And one day, he gave me a picture he'd done of me as a superhero. It had a cape and everything. I thought it was the neatest thing I'd ever seen. Then Jeremy moved away to Florida. And when my mom and I looked up Florida on the map, it was on the other side of the country from where we lived in Oregon.
People don't stay in Green Creek,
she told me as my fingers touched roads on the map.
There's nothing here.
We stayed, I said. She looked away. She was wrong. People did stay. Not a lot of them, but they did. She did. I did. Gordo did. People I went to school with, though they might leave eventually. Green Creek was dying, but it wasn't dead. We had a grocery store, the diner where she worked, a McDonald's, a one-screen movie theater that showed movies that came out in the 70s, a liquor store with bars on the windows, a wig store with mannequin heads in the windows, draped with red and black and yellow hair, Gordo's, a gas station, 2 traffic lights, 1 school for all grades. All in the middle of the woods, in the middle of the Cascade Mountains. I didn't understand why people wanted to leave. To me, it was home. We lived back off in the trees near the end of a dirt road. The house was blue. The trim was white. The paint peeled, but that didn't matter. In the summer, it smelled like grass and lilacs and thyme and pine cones. In the fall, the leaves crunched under my feet. In the winter, the smoke would rise from the chimney, mixing with the snow. In the spring, the birds would call out in the trees, and at night an owl would ask, "Who? Who? Who?" until the very early morning. There was a house down the road from us at the end of the lane that I could see through the trees. My mom said it was empty, but sometimes there was a car or a truck parked out in front and lights on inside at night. It was a big house with many windows. I tried looking inside them, but they were always covered. Sometimes it would be months before I'd see another car outside.
"Who lived there?"
I asked my dad when I was 10. He grunted and opened another beer.
"Who lived there?"
I asked my mom when she got home from work.
"I don't know," she said, touching my ear. "It was empty when we got here."
I never asked anyone else. I told myself it was because mystery was better than reality. I never asked why we moved to Green Creek when I was 3. I never asked if I had grandparents or cousins. It was always just the 3 of us, until it was just the 2 of us.
"Do you think he'll come back?"
I asked Gordo when I was 14. "Damn fucking computers," Gordo muttered under his breath, pushing another button on the Nexique that was attached to the car. "Everything has to be done with computers." He pressed another button, and the machine beeped angrily at him. "Can't just go in and figure it out myself, no. Have to use diagnostic codes because everything is automated. Grandpap could just listen to the idle of a car and tell you what was wrong." I took the Nexique from his hands and tapped to the right screen. I pulled the code and handed it back to him.
"Catalytic converter."
"I knew that," he said with a scowl.
"That's going to cost a lot."
"I know."
"Mr. Fordham can't afford it."
"I know."
"You're not going to charge him full price, are you?"
Because that was the kind of person Gordo was. He took care of others, even if he didn't want anyone to know. He said, "No, Ox. He's not coming back. Get this up on the lift, okay?" Mom sat at the kitchen table, a bunch of papers spread out around her. She looked sad. I was nervous.
"More bank stuff?"
I asked. She shook her head.
"No." "Well?" "Ox, it's..."
She picked up her pen and started to sign her name. She stopped before she finished the first letter, put the pen back down. She looked up at me.
"I'll do right by you."
"I know." Because I did. She picked up the pen and signed her name. And then again. And again. And again. She initialed a few times, too. When she was done, she said, "And that's that." She laughed and stood and took my hand, and we danced in the kitchen to a song neither of us could hear. She left after a little while. It was dark by the time I looked down at the papers on the table. They were for a divorce. She went back to her maiden name, Calloway. She asked if I wanted to change mine, too. I told her no. I would make Matheson a good name. She didn't think I saw her tears when I said that, but I did. I sat in the cafeteria. It was loud. I couldn't concentrate. My head hurt. A guy named Clint walked by my table with his friends. I was by myself. He said, "Fucking retard." His friends laughed. I got up and saw the look of fear in his eyes. I was bigger than him. I turned and left, because my mom said I couldn't get in fights anymore. Clint said something behind me, and his friends laughed again. I told myself that when I got friends, we wouldn't be mean like they were. No one bothered me when I sat outside. It was almost nice. My sandwich was good. Sometimes I walked in the woods. Things were clearer there. The trees swayed in the breeze. Birds told me stories. They didn't judge me. One day, I picked up a stick and pretended it was a sword. I hopped over a creek, but it was too wide and my feet got wet. I lay on my back and looked at the sky through the trees while waiting for my socks to dry. I dug my toes into the dirt. A dragonfly landed on a rock near my head. It was green and blue. Its wings had blue veins. Its eyes were shiny and black. It flew away, and I wondered how long it would live. Something moved off to my right. I looked over and heard a growl. I thought I should run, but I couldn't make my feet work, or my hands. I didn't want to leave my socks behind. So instead, I said, "Hello." There was no response, but I knew something was there. "I'm Ox. It's okay." A huff of air, like a sigh. I told it that I liked the woods. There was a flash of black, but then it was gone. When I got home, I had leaves in my hair, and there was a car parked in front of the empty house at the end of the lane. It was gone the next day. That winter, I left school and went to the diner. I was on break for Christmas. 3 weeks of nothing but the shop ahead, and I was happy. It started snowing again by the time I opened the door to Oasis. The bell rang out overhead. An inflatable palm tree was near the door. A papier-mâché sun hung from the ceiling. Four people sat at the counter drinking coffee. It smelled like grease. I loved it. A waitress named Jenny snapped her gum and smiled at me. She was two grades above me. Sometimes she smiled at me at school, too. "Hey, Ox," she said.
"Hi."
"Cold out?" I shrugged. "Your nose is red," she said.
"Oh."
She laughed. "You hungry?"
"Yeah."
"Sit down. I'll get you some coffee and tell your mom you're here." I did. At my booth near the back. It wasn't really my booth, but everyone knew it was. "Maggie," Jenny said back into the kitchen. "Ox is here." She winked at me as she took a plate of eggs and toast to Mr. Marsh, who flirted with a sly smile, even though he was 84. Jenny giggled at him, and he ate his eggs. He put ketchup on them. I thought that was odd.
"Hey," Mom said, putting coffee down in front of me.
"Hi."
She ran her fingers through my hair, brushing off flecks of snow. They melted on my shoulders.
"Tests go okay?"
"Think so."
"We study enough?"
"Maybe." "I forgot who Stonewall Jackson was, though." She sighed.
"Ox."
"It's okay," I told her. "I got the rest."
"You promise?"
"Yes." And she believed me, because I didn't lie.
"Hungry?"
"Yeah. Can I have..." The bell rang overhead, and a man walked in. He seemed vaguely familiar, but I couldn't think of where I'd seen him before. He was Gordo's age, and strong, and big. He had a full, light-colored beard. He brushed a hand over his shaved head. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. He let it out slowly. He opened his eyes, and I swear they flashed. But all I saw was blue again.
"Give me a second, Ox," Mom said.
She went to talk to the man, and I did my best to look away. He was a stranger, yes, but there was something else. I thought on it as I took a sip from my coffee. He sat at the booth next to mine. We faced each other. He smiled briefly at me. It was a nice smile, bright and toothy. Mom handed him a menu and told him she'd be back. I could already see Jenny peeking out from the kitchen, watching the man. She pushed her boobs up, ran her fingers through her hair, and grabbed the coffee pot.
"I got this one,"
she muttered. Mom rolled her eyes. She was charming. The man smiled at her politely. She touched his hand, just a slight scrape of her fingernails. He ordered soup. She laughed. He asked for cream and sugar for his coffee. She said her name was Jenny. He said he would like another napkin. She left the table looking slightly disappointed.
"Meal and a show,"
I muttered. The man grinned at me like he'd heard.
"Figure out what you want, kiddo?"
Mom asked as she came back to the table.
"Burger." "You got it, handsome."
I smiled, because I adored her. The man looked at my mom as she walked away. His nostrils flared, looked back at me, cocked his head, nostrils flared again, like he was sniffing, smelling. I copied him and sniffed the air. It smelled the same to me, like it always did. The man laughed and shook his head. "It's nothing bad," he said. His voice was deep and kind. Those teeth flashed again.
"That's good," I said.
"I'm Mark.
Ox.
An eyebrow went up. That's so.
Oxnard, I shrugged. Everyone calls me Ox.
Ox, he said. Strong name.
Strong like an ox? I suggested.
He laughed. Heard that a lot?
I guess.
He looked out the window. I like it here. So much more was said in those words, but I couldn't even come close to grasping any of it.
Me too. Mom said people don't stay here. He said,
You're here?
And it felt profound. I am.
That your mom? He nodded toward the kitchen.
Yeah.
She's here then. Maybe they don't always stay here, but some do. He looked down at his hands. And maybe they can come back.
Like going home? I asked.
That smile came back. Yes, Ox. Like going home. That's... It smells like that here. Home.
I smell bacon, I said sheepishly.
Mark laughed. I know you do. There's a house. In the woods, down off McCarthy. It's empty now.
I know that house. I live right near it.
He nodded. I thought you might. It explains why you smell... Jenny came back, brought him his soup. He was polite again. Nothing more. Not like he'd been with me. I opened my mouth to ask him something. Anything. When my mom came back out.
Let him eat, she scolded me as she placed the plate in front of me. It's not nice to interrupt someone's dinner.
But I... He's okay, Mark said. I was the one being intrusive.
Mom looked wary. If you say so.
Mark nodded and ate his soup.
You stay here until I'm off, Mom told me. I don't want you walking home in this. It's only until 6. Maybe we can watch a movie when we get home. Okay. I promised Gordo I'd be at the shop early tomorrow. No rest for us, huh?
She kissed my forehead and left me to it. I wanted to ask Mark more questions, but I remembered my manners. I ate my burger instead. It was slightly charred, just the way I liked it. Gordo, Mark asked. It was almost a question, but also like he was trying out the name on his tongue. His smile was sad now.
My boss, he owns the body shop.
That right, Mark said. Who would have thought?
Thought what?
Make sure you hold on to her, Mark said. Your mom. I looked up at him. He seemed sad.
It's just us two,
I told him quietly, as if it were some great secret. Even more reason. Things will change, though, I think, for you and her, for all of us. He wiped his mouth and pulled out his wallet, pulling a folded bill out and leaving it on the table. He stood and pulled his coat back over his shoulders. Before he left, he looked down at me. We'll see you soon, Ox.
Who?
My family.
The house?
He nodded. I think it's almost time to come home.
Can we?
I stopped myself, because I was just a kid. What, Ox?
He looked curious. Can we be friends when you come home? I don't have many of those.
I didn't have any except for Gordo and my mom, but I didn't want to scare him away. His hand tightened into a fist at his side. Not many, he asked.
I speak too slow, I said, looking down at my hands. Or I don't speak at all. People don't like that.
Or me, but I had already said too much. There's nothing wrong with the way you speak.
Maybe.
If enough people said it, it had to be partially true. Ox, I'm going to tell you a secret, okay?
Sure.
I was excited, because friends shared secrets, so maybe that meant we were friends. It's always the ones who are the quietest, who often have the greatest things to say. And yes, I think we'll be friends. He left then. I didn't see my friend again for 17 months. That night, as I lay in bed waiting for sleep, I heard a howl from deep in the woods. It rose like a song until I was sure it was all I could ever want to sing. It went on, and all I could think of was home, home, home. Eventually, it fell away, And so did I. I told myself later it was just a dream. "Here," Gordo said on my 15th birthday. He shoved a badly wrapped package into my hands. It had snowmen on it. Other guys from the shop were there. Rico, Tanner, Chris, all young and wide-eyed and alive. Friends of Gordo's who'd grown up with him in Green Creek. They were all grinning at me, waiting, like they knew some big secret that I didn't.
"It's May," I said.
Gordo rolled his eyes. "Open the damn thing." He leaned back in his ratty chair behind the shop and took a deep drag on his cigarette. His tattoos looked brighter than they normally were. I wondered if he'd gotten them touched up recently. I tore through the paper. It was loud. I wanted to savor it because I didn't get presents often, but I couldn't wait. It only took seconds, but it felt like forever.
"This," I said when I saw what it was. "This is..."
It was reverence. It was grace. It was beauty. I wondered if this meant I could finally breathe, like I had found my place in this world I didn't understand. Embroidered, red, white, blue. Two letters, stitched perfectly. "Ox," the work shirt read. Like I mattered. Like I meant something. Like I was important. Men don't cry. My daddy taught me that. Men don't cry because they don't have time to cry. I must not have been a man yet, because I cried. I bowed my head and cried. Rico touched my shoulder. Tanner rubbed a hand over my head. Chris touched his work boot to mine. They stood around me, over me, hiding me away should anyone stumble in and see the tears. And Gordo put his forehead to mine and said, "You belong to us now." Something bloomed within me, and I was warm. It was like the sun had burst in my chest, and I felt more alive than I had in a long time. Later, they helped me put on the shirt. It fit perfectly. I took a smoke break with Gordo that winter.
"Can I have one?"
He shrugged. "Don't tell your ma." He opened the box and pulled a cigarette out for me. He held up the lighter and covered the flame against the wind. I took the cig between my lips and put it toward the fire. I inhaled. It burned. I coughed. My eyes watered and gray smoke came out my nose and mouth. The second drag was easier. The guys laughed. I thought maybe we were friends. Sometimes, I thought I was dreaming, but then realized I was actually awake. It was getting harder to wake up. Gordo made me quit smoking 4 months later. He told me it was for my own good. I told him it was because he didn't want me stealing his cigarettes anymore. He cuffed the back of my head and told me to get to work. I didn't smoke after that. We were all still friends. I asked him once about his tattoos, the shapes, the patterns, like there was a design, all bright colors and strange symbols that I thought should be familiar, like it was on the tip of my tongue. I knew they went all the way up his arms. I didn't know how far they went beyond that. He said, "Everyone has a past, Ox."
"Are they yours?"
He looked away. "Something like that." I wondered if I would ever etch my past onto my skin in swirls and colors and shapes. Two things happened on my 16th birthday. I was officially hired at Gordo's, had a business card and everything, filled out tax forms that Gordo helped me with because I didn't understand them. I didn't cry that time. The guys patted me on the back and joked about how they no longer worked in a sweatshop with child labor. Gordo gave me a set of keys to the shop and smeared some grease on my face. I just grinned at him. I didn't think I'd ever seen him so happy. I went home that afternoon and told myself I was a man now. Then, the second thing happened. The empty house at the end of the lane was no longer empty. And there was a boy on the dirt road in the woods. Chapter 3. Tornado, Soap Bubbles. I walked down the road toward the house. It was warm, so I took off my work shirt. I left the white tank top on. A breeze cooled my skin. The keys to the shop were heavy in my pocket. I pulled them out and looked at them. I'd never had that many keys before. I felt responsible for something. I put them back in my pocket. I didn't want to take the chance of losing them. And then he said, "Hey, hey there, you, hey, guy." I looked up. There was a boy standing in the dirt road watching me. His nose was twitching and his eyes were wide. They were blue and bright, short blonde hair, tan skin, almost as much as mine. He was young and small, and I wondered if I was dreaming again. "Hello?" I said. "Who are you?" he asked. "I'm Ox."
"Ox? Ox, do you smell that?"
I sniffed the air. I didn't smell anything other than the woods. "I smell trees," I said. He shook his head.
"No, no, no, it's something bigger."
He walked toward me, his eyes going wider. Then he was running. He wasn't big. He couldn't have been more than 9 or 10. He collided with my legs, and I barely took a step back. He started climbing me, hooking his legs around my thighs and pulling himself up until his arms were around my neck and we were face to face.
"It's you!"
I didn't know what was going on. "What's me?" He was in my arms now. I didn't want him to fall. He took my face in his hands and squished my cheeks together.
"Why do you smell like that?" he demanded. "Where did you come from? Do you live in the woods? What are you? We just got here, finally. Where's your house?"
He put his forehead against mine and inhaled deeply.
"I don't get it," he exclaimed. "What is it?"
And then he was crawling up and over my shoulders, feet pressed against my chest and neck until he clambered onto my back, arms around my neck, chin hooked on my shoulder.
"We have to go see my mom and dad," he said. "They'll know what this is. They know everything."
He was a tornado of fingers and feet and words. I was caught in the storm. His hands were in my hair, pulling my head back as he said he lived in the house at the end of the lane, that they had just arrived today, that he had moved from far away. He was sad to leave his friends behind. He was 10. He hoped to be big like me when he grew up. Did I like comic books? Did I like mashed potatoes? What was Gordo's? Did I get to work on Ferraris? Did I ever blow up any cars? He wanted to be an astronaut or an archaeologist, but he couldn't be those things because one day he'd have to be a leader instead. He stopped talking for a little while after he said that. His knees dug into my sides, his hands wrapped around my neck. The sheer weight of him was almost too much for me to take. We came upon my house. He made me stop so he could look at it. He didn't get down from my back. Instead, I hitched him up higher so he could see.
"Do you have your own room?" he asked.
"Yes. It's just me and my mom now." He was quiet. Then,
"I'm sorry."
We'd just met. He had nothing to apologize for.
"For?" "For whatever just made you sad."
Like he knew what I was thinking. Like he knew how I felt. Like he was here and real.
"I dream," I said.
"Sometimes it feels like I'm awake. And then I'm not."
And he said, "You're awake now. Ox, 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 don't you see?"
"See what?" he whispered, as if saying it any louder would make it untrue.
"We live so close to each other."
We turned toward the house at the end of the lane. The afternoon was waning. The shadows were stretching. We walked among the trees, and up ahead there were lights, bright lights, a beacon calling someone home. 3 cars, 1 SUV, 2 trucks. All were less than a year old. All had main license plates. 2 30-foot moving trucks. And the people, all standing, watching, waiting, like they knew we were coming, like they'd heard us from far away. 2 were younger. One guy was my age, the other guy maybe a little younger. They were blonde and smaller than me, but not by much. Blue eyes and curious expressions. They looked like the tornado on my back. There was a woman, older, the same coloring as the others. She held herself regally, and I wondered if I'd ever seen anyone more beautiful. Her eyes were kind, but cautious. She was tense, like she was ready to move at any moment. A man stood next to her. He was darker than the rest, more like me than the others. He was fierce and foreboding, and all I could think was, respect, 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 though I'd never seen him before. His hand was on the woman's back. And next to them was, oh, Mark, I said. He looked exactly the same. Mark grinned. Ox, how lovely to see you again. I see you've made a new friend. He looked pleased. The boy on my back wriggled his way down. I let his legs go, and he dropped behind me. He grabbed my hand and started pulling me toward the beautiful people, like I had a right to be there. He started spinning his storm again, voice rising up and down, words forcefully punctuated without pattern. Mom! Mom! You have to smell him! It's like... I don't even know what it's like! I was walking in the woods to scope out our territory so I could be like Dad, and then it was like, whoa! And then he was all standing there, and he didn't see me at first because I'm getting so good at hunting. I was like, rawr, and grr. But then I smelled it again, and it was him, and it was all kaboom! I don't even know! You gotta smell him, and then tell me why it's all candy canes and pine cones and epic and awesome! They all stared at him as if they'd come across something unexpected. Mark had a secret smile on his face, hidden by his hand. Is that so? The woman finally said. Her voice wavered like it was a fragile thing. Rawr and grr and kaboom. And the smells, he cried.
Can't forget about those, the man next to her said faintly. Candy canes and pine cones and epic and awesome.
Didn't I tell you? Mark said to them. Ox is
different.
I had no idea what was going on, but that wasn't anything new. I wondered if I'd done something wrong. I felt bad. I tried to pull my hand away, but the kid wouldn't let go. Hey, I said to him. He looked back at me, blue eyes wide. Ox, he said. Ox, I have got to show you stuff. What stuff? Like, I don't... He was sputtering. Like, everything! You just got here, I said. I felt out of place. Don't you need to... I didn't know what I was trying to say. My words were failing me. This is why I didn't talk. It was easier.
Joe, the man said, give Ox a moment, okay?
But Dad...
Joseph.
It almost sounded like a growl. The boy, Joe, I thought, Joseph, sighed and dropped my hand. I took a step back. I'm sorry, I said. He was just there, and I didn't mean anything.
It's okay, Ox, Mark said, taking a step down from the porch. These things can be a bit... much.
What things? I asked.
He shrugged. Life.
You said we could be friends.
I did. It took us a bit longer to come back than I thought it would.
Behind him, the woman bowed her head, and the man looked away. Joe's hand slowly slid back into mine. And it was then I knew they'd lost something, though I didn't know what, or even how I knew.
That's Joe, Mark said, pushing through. But I think you know that already.
Maybe, I said. Didn't get his name. He was talking too much.
Everyone looked at me again.
I wasn't talking too much, Joe grumbled. You talk too much. With your face.
But he didn't leave my side. He kicked the dirt with his sneakers. One of his shoes was about to become untied. There was a ladybug on a dandelion, red and black and yellow. A breeze came, and it flew away.
Joe,
I said, trying out the name.
He grinned as he looked up at me. Hi, Ox. Ox, there's something I...
He cut himself off, sneaking a glance up at his father before he sighed again.
Fine,
he said, and I didn't know who he was talking to.
Those are his brothers. Mark said. Carter?
The one my age. He grinned at me and waved.
Kelly?
The younger of the two, somewhere between Carter and Joe. He nodded at me, looking a little bored. That left two others. They didn't scare me, but it felt like they should. I waited for Mark, but he kept quiet. Eventually, the woman said,
You're an odd one, Ox.
Yes, ma'am, I said, because my mom taught me respect. She laughed. I thought it beautiful.
I'm Elizabeth Bennett. This is my husband, Thomas. You already know his brother, Mark? It looks as if we're to be neighbors.
Pleased to make your acquaintance, I said, because my mom taught me manners.
What about my acquaintance?
Joe asked me, pulling on my hand. I looked down at him.
Yours too.
That smile returned. Would you like to stay for dinner? Thomas asked, watching me carefully. I thought yes and no at the same time. It made my head hurt.
Mom's coming home soon. We're eating dinner together tonight because it's my birthday.
I winced. I hadn't meant to say that. Joe gasped.
What? Why didn't you tell me? Mom, it's his birthday!
She sounded amused when she said,
I'm standing right here, Joe, I heard. Happy birthday, Ox. How old are you now?
16. They were all still staring at me. There was sweat on the back of my neck. The air was hot.
Cool, Carter said.
Me too. Joe glared at him, baring his teeth.
I found him first.
He stood in front of me, as if blocking Carter from me.
That's enough, his father said, his voice a bit deeper.
But...
Hey, I said to Joe. He looked up at me with frustrated eyes.
It's okay, I said. Listen to your dad.
He sighed and nodded, squeezing my hand again. His shoelace came untied as he kicked the dandelion.
I'm 10, he muttered finally. And I know you're old, but I found you first, so you have to be my friend first. Sorry, Dad.
And then he said,
I just want to get you a present.
So I said, You already did. And I didn't think I'd ever seen a smile as bright as his at that moment. I said goodbye then, and I knew they watched me as I walked away.
People moved in?
Mom asked me when she got home.
Yeah, the Bennets. You met them?
She sounded surprised. She knew I didn't talk to people if I could get away with it.
Yeah.
She waited.
Well?
I looked up from my history book. Finals were next week, and I had tests I wasn't ready for.
Well?
She rolled her eyes.
Are they nice?
I think so. They have... I thought on what they had.
What?
Kids. One's my age. The others are younger.
What's that smile for?
A tornado, I said, without meaning to. She kissed my hair.
And here I thought you being older would mean you'd make more sense.
Happy birthday, Ox. We ate dinner that night. Meatloaf, my favorite, just for me. We laughed together. It was something we hadn't done in a while. She gave me a present wrapped in Sunday comics from the newspaper. A 1940 Buick shop manual, old and worn. The cover was orange. It was musty and wonderful. She said she saw it at Goodwill and thought of me. There were some new pants for work. My others were starting to fall apart. There was a card, too. A wolf on the front howling at the moon. Inside, a joke. What do you call a lost wolf?
A were-wolf.
Underneath, she'd written 7 words. This year will be better. Love, Mom. She drew hearts around the word love, little wispy things that I thought could float away if they but caught on my breath. We washed the dishes as her old radio played from the open window above the sink. She sang along quietly as she splashed me with water, and I wondered why I smelled like candy canes and pine cones of awesome and epic. There was a soap bubble on her nose. She said I had one on my ear. I took her by the hand and spun her in a circle as the music picked up. Her eyes were bright, and she said,
You're going to make someone very happy someday, and I can't wait to see it happen.
I went to bed and saw the lights on in the house at the end of the lane through my window. I wondered about them, the Bennets. Someone, my mother had said, makes someone very happy. Not a her, but someone. I closed my eyes and slept.
I dreamt of tornadoes.
Chapter 4. Wolf of Stone. Dinah Shore. Rico said, "Looking good, Poppy," when I came to work the next day. "What's got you going with that spring in your step?" It was Sunday, the Lord's Day as I was taught. But I figured the Lord was okay with me coming to this house of worship instead of one of his. I'd learned my faith at Gordo's. "Must be some pretty girl," Tanner called from where he was, bent over some ridiculous SUV that could be turned on by the sound of your voice. "He's a real man now. You get some 16-year-old strange last night?" I was used to the crude. They meant no harm. That didn't stop me from flushing furiously. "No," I said. "No, it's not like that." "Oh," Rico said, slinking over to me, hips rolling so obscenely. "Look at that blush." He ran his hand through my hair, his thumb against my ear. "She pretty, Poppy?" "There is no girl."
"Oh? A boy, then? We don't discriminate here at the Casa de Gordo."
I pushed him off, and he laughed and laughed. "Chris?" I asked. "Seeing the moms," Tanner said. "Stomach thing again. She okay?" Rico shrugged. "Maybe. Don't know yet."
"Ox!" Gordo shouted from the office. "Get your ass in here!"
"Oi!" Rico said with a small smile. "Careful there, Poppy. Someone's in a mood today." And he sounded like it. Voice strained and harsh. I worried. Not for me. For him.
"He's just pissed off because Ox needs the next week off for school," Tanner muttered. "You know how he gets when Ox isn't here."
I felt awful.
"Maybe I could..."
"You hush that mouth of yours," Rico said, pressing his fingers against my lips. I could taste oil. "You need to focus on school, and Gordo can just deal with it. Education is more important than his little bitch fests. We clear?" I nodded, and he dropped his fingers.
"We'll be fine," Tanner said. "Just get through your tests, and we'll have the whole summer. Okay?"
"Ox!" Rico muttered something in Spanish that sounded like he was calling Gordo a fucking dickhead dictator. I'd learned I was adept at picking up curses in Spanish. I walked to the back of the shop, where Gordo was sitting in his office. His brow was lined as he did his one-finger typing thing. Tanner called it his hunt and pecker. Gordo didn't think that was funny. "Close the door," he said, without looking up at me. I did, and sat in the empty seat on the other side of his desk. He didn't say anything, so I figured it was up to me to start. Gordo was like that sometimes.
"You okay?"
He scowled at the computer screen. "I'm fine."
"Awfully twitchy for fine."
"You're not funny, Ox." I shrugged. That was okay. I knew that about myself. He sighed and ran a hand over his face.
"Sorry," he muttered.
"Okay." He finally looked up at me. "I don't want you here next week." I tried keeping the hurt from my face, but I don't think I did very well.
"Okay."
He looked stricken.
"Oh, Jesus, Ox, not like that. You have your finals next week."
"I know. And you know part of the deal with your ma is that your grades don't suffer, or else you can't work here."
"I know."
I was annoyed, and it showed. "I don't want... just..." He groaned and sat back in the chair.
"I suck at this."
"What?" He motioned between the two of us.
"This whole thing."
"You do okay," I said quietly. "This thing. My brother. Or father." We didn't say it. We didn't have to. We both knew what it was. It was just easier to be awkward about it. Because we were men. He narrowed his eyes.
"Yeah?"
"Yeah." "How are the grades?"
"B's. 1C.
History?"
"Yeah.
Fucking Stonewall Jackson." He laughed, long and loud. Gordo always did laugh big, rare as it was.
"Don't let your ma hear you say that."
"Never in your life." "Full time this summer?" I grinned at him. I couldn't wait for the long days.
"Yeah, sure, Gordo."
"I'm gonna work your ass off, Ox." The lines on his forehead smoothed out.
Can I still stop by next week?" I asked.
I won't. I just...
Words. Words were my enemy. How to say that here was where I felt the safest. Here was where I felt most at home. Here was where I wouldn't be judged. I wasn't a fucking retard here. I wasn't a waste of space or time. I wanted to say so much, too much, and found I couldn't really say anything at all. But it was Gordo, so I didn't have to. He looked relieved, though he kept his voice stern for appearances. No working in the shop. You come in here and you study. No dicking around. I mean it, Ox. Chris or Tanner can help you with fucking Stonewall Jackson. They know that shit better than me. Don't ask Rico. You won't get anything done. The tightness loosened in my chest. Thanks, Gordo. He rolled his eyes. Get out of here. You have work to do. I saluted him, which I knew he hated. And since I was in such a good mood, I pretended not to hear him when he muttered, I'm proud of you, kiddo. Later, I'd remember I forgot to tell him about the Bennetts. I walked home. The sunlight filtered through the trees, little shadows of leaves on my skin. I wondered how old the forest here was. I thought it ancient. Joe was waiting for me at the dirt road where he'd been the day before. His eyes were wide as he fidgeted. His hands were hidden behind his back. I knew it was you, he said. His voice was pitched high and triumphant. I'm getting better at... He cut himself off with a cough. At doing stuff like knowing you are there? That's good, I told him. Getting better is always good. His smile was dazzling. I'm always getting better. I'll be the leader one day. Of what? His eyes went wide again. Oh, crap. What? Presents. I frowned. Presents? Well, a present. For what? You. He squinted at me. You. He blushed fiercely. It was splotchy and went up to his hairline. He looked at the ground. For your birthday? He mumbled. The guys had gotten me presents. My mom had. No one else ever really did. It was something friends did. Or family. Oh, I said. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Is that what you're hiding? He blushed harder and wouldn't look at me. He nodded once. I could hear birds above us. They called out long and loud. I gave him the time he needed. It didn't take long. I could see the resolve flood into him, steeling his shoulders, holding his head high, marching forward. I didn't know what he'd be a leader of one day, but he would be good. I hoped he would remember to be kind. He held out his hand. He had a black box with a little blue ribbon wrapped around it. I was nervous for some reason. I don't have anything for you, I said quietly. He shrugged.
It's not my birthday.
When is it?
August. What are you even... Jeez, take the box.
I did. It was heavier than I thought it would be. I put my work shirt over my shoulder and he stood close. He took a deep breath and closed his eyes. I untied the ribbon and remembered a dress my mother had worn once on a picnic in the summer when I turned 9. It had little ribbons tied in bows along the edges, and she had laughed as she handed me a sandwich and some potato salad. After, we lay on our backs, and I pointed out shapes and clouds, and she said,
Days like this are my favorite.
And I said, Me too.